You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
Hello, Devin.
Hello.
And we'd like to welcome this week's guest. We haven't had a guest for a while. I'm quite excited about this. John, why, I'll let you introduce our guest this week. You contacted him, brought him in. Let's introduce him. Let's bring him on.
Yes. I reached out to Tyson Whiting, and he has graciously agreed to come on. Welcome, Tyson.
Thank you, John and Alan. I had nothing better to do tonight.
Oh, it's so good to know we have us to fall back on. Sweet.
you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel there, my friend.
So sweet. Well, I'm excited to have you on, Tyson. I don't think I've ever really spoken at length with you, off and on Twitter once in a while, but it's been a bit, and I'm excited to have you on. Why don't you let's start off the show and talk about what you're doing nowadays. For those who may not remember where you were prior, you were at 1320K fan, but that is no longer, right?
Yeah, the station is gone. I think the signal is now sold to some sort of real estate group, and they're probably building houses on whatever the signal was on as we speak.
All right. What are you up to nowadays?
I'm doing some, when you're unemployed, you kind of use the term freelance. That's kind of like the code word for looking. You know, I'm a freelance play-by-play. I host a podcast right now, Tyson on Sports. You can find just about anywhere you have podcasts. And, that one's about sports. I was at KFAN for about 3 years, and not just kind of transition period right now, but it is with a lot, which happens to a lot of people. I mean, at ESPN last week, they had their transition going on, and they let go of a bunch of people. So it's just, unfortunately, that's just kind of the business that that's turned into, is one where you're seeing less radio stations go full sports. You're seeing a lot less of the media outlets that are mainstream, I guess you would say.
Yeah, I saw that Gunther and Ben are now appearing on Saturdays on K-Bear 101. One thing I really have been curious about KFAN is, I listen occasionally to all three stations, but now there's only two sports stations. But how much heads up did you guys have that this was coming?
There is no heads up whatsoever. It was one of those things, we thought we were going to a meeting on a Monday morning, and it turned out to be snowing like 5 inches that morning. We thought we were going into sort of a brainstorming meeting. We thought we'd come up with some new ideas for what to do during the months of March and April, and how to kind of go about spring football and those sort of things. And so we thought we were going to one of those meetings, and then they send us to the big boss's office. Me and Will Smith kind of walk in there. And about what the time we walk in there, we both had that same feeling, that kind of cold, dark feeling of this isn't good. And so, then we kind of knew pretty quickly what it was about. And so we didn't really have any clue. I mean, we thought we were doing a pretty decent job. We thought we were putting out a good product, and it kind of came as a bit of a surprise to us.
Wow. That sounds exactly like one of the ways I got laid off. That's sad. Oh man. Well, I see Utah Grizzlies in your bio. Are you calling games for the Grizzlies?
I did the intermission and post game shows for the Utah Grizzlies on both ESPN 700 and 1370 AM, Utah's Classic Country. I did the intermission and post game shows. Did a little bit of PR with them as well. Ended up being the Grizzlies mascot for a few occasions. So I was Grizzby for a few appearances, and so that's kind of kept me busy, and that's a lot of fun. I mean, Grizzlies made the playoffs for the 10th straight year, and I know we'll talk about the Jazz in a little bit and reaching the playoffs for the first time in 5 years. There's nothing like playoff basketball, playoff hockey, or playoffs in any sport for that matter.
No, there isn't. Not at all. I'm more intrigued. I want to hear a little bit more about you before we get into the meat of the show, because you grew up in Utah, did you, or –
I'm a homegrown guy. I've lived in Salt Lake City ever since I was 2 years old. Grew up a big Jazz fan. And you think about in the 90s when You had Stockton and Malone. You had two first ballot Hall of Famers. You had two of the 10 best players in the league at that time for a good 15-year stretch. And so you grow up just loving the Jazz. And I was just a huge Jazz fan, watching games with Hot Rod Hundley and, you know, Jerry Sloan. I always enjoyed with the Jerry Sloan how he would get thrown out of a game, and because Hot Rod was sitting right next to the bench, you knew exactly what got Jerry Sloan thrown out of the game. You know, I'm one of those guys that grew up a big Jazz fan, you know, big baseball fan, you know, big Atlanta Braves fan. I'm one of those guys that just like every sport. And ever since I was probably 5 or 6 years old, I've just always been a big sports fan. Just that's always just consumed 24/7. Just, you know, that's just my life. It's just sports, sports, sports.
So what made you decide to go into eventually into radio and where you're at now? What got you on that kick?
Well, I was kind of a weird kid that when I was 7 years old, I'd listen to sports talk radio for like 12 hours a day. I don't know how many 7 year olds that actually, you know, do that. You know, you wake up like 7 o'clock, you turn the radio on, and then it's just on the whole day. And so I kind of knew at an early age, for whatever reason, when you're like 9 years old, people always ask you, what do you want to do for, you know, when you grow up? And I always said I wanted to be a sports talk radio host. And so, you know, it's one of those things as life goes on, you just kind of try to pursue it. And then you get into it and you realize, oh, they don't pay a whole lot. And there's, you know, then you realize it's not nearly as glamorous as you originally thought it was. But it was one of those things that, you know, that's just kind of what drew me into radio. Is I've just always been intrigued with it. I've always been intrigued with the conversations, the opinions, and that sort of thing.
Right on. Who did you listen to back then?
Boy, I was probably 5 years old. I remember I'd come home from like kindergarten and it would be a show with the late Dave Blackwell and Steve Klauke.
Okay.
And they called themselves the Odd Couple. So it'd be those two guys, Chris Tunis. And then when K-Fan started out in 96, I would listen to guys like Kevin Graham and David Locke and kind of the guys that kind of dominated the 1990s locally are kind of the ones I always listen to.
Right on. You mentioned a lot of guys that I listened to in my younger years. I was a big Chris Tunis fan, but then again, I've been a Cougar fan my whole life. So Chris Tunis was a part of my life in the younger years, hearing him do some of the Cougar pre-post game and halftime calls and the other KSL shows that he did back then. And then Locke. I listened to Locke all through the late 90s, through the finals years. Those were fantastic shows. So you start mentioning names, even Blackwell, man. Those were some good times on radio.
Absolutely. I think those were kind of the golden age. That was kind of the golden age because you think about, you know, newspapers, you didn't have social media back then. So it was kind of, you didn't have necessarily all the technologies and stuff. It was just kind of where, you know, radio was just kind of one of the few things you had. You had the newspaper in the morning and you had radio throughout the day. It was kind of like if a big news story broke in the middle of the day, well, where else were you going to tune? There was no Twitter. You know, there was barely an internet back in the 90s.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you went to the radio.
Yep. No, absolutely. I remember good old days. Right, John?
Absolutely. I remember Mark Armstrong and the coach listening to their afternoon shows.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember them?
Yes. Oh, good times. Well, cool. Let's transition right into our first topic of the night. John, why don't you go ahead? We want to talk. I mean, obviously, we want to talk Jazz basketball. I think that's where we want to start. Since our last show, Jazz went on, defeated the Clippers. I don't know if we really need to rehash much of what happened. Game 7, where we're at. Do we want to talk about that, or do we want to jump right into Golden State, John?
Well, it's more fun to talk about the good news of the week.
Okay.
Jazz, they not only got to the playoffs for the first time in 5 years, they won a playoff series for the first time in 7 years, and they did it by winning 3 road games. And, you know, watching the Jazz lose it in game 6, but fight back in game 7 and turning game 7 into the only game in the entire series that was won by double digits, I thought was really good. I thought that series alone has greatly increased the chance of Hayward staying. I never did think he was going to leave, but now I'm sure he's going to stay. You know, they they managed to vanquish the Clippers, and the Clippers, you know, fifth year in a row that they've had a lead in a series only to lose the series. And so now that they have their soul searching to do, you know, we were all talking last week like it was a foregone conclusion because the Jazz were up 3-2 at the time. After game six, it was not a foregone conclusion, but game seven, you had the resurrection of Derek Favors. All kinds of things went right in game seven. And, you know, there was a lot of positive feelings coming out of that series.
No, I agree. I was at game six. Went home frustrated that night, but never really doubted. I mean, I think we've talked. I planned and believed that the Jazz would win in six. I was wrong. I still felt like the Jazz were going to win the series. It worked out just fine on Sunday. I don't know about the rest of you, but I felt like as soon as the Jazz got that 20-point lead in the third, I thought, okay, watch out. The Clippers may come back. But at that point in time, I was pretty comfortable. I thought 20-point lead. Jazz pace, they've been in control of the pace this whole game. I don't see them relinquishing that, and they really didn't. It was gone by then. I mean, fourth quarter started, and it looked like the Clippers were just done for the night. So I was very glad. I mean, like you said, positives. I never believed that Hayward was going anywhere. I still don't believe that. And you're right. If anything, this solidified that that I think he's going to stay. What do you think, Tyson, do you think Hayward's going to stay? I mean, what are your thoughts on this whole situation with Hayward?
Yeah, I think there's about 70% chance he stays. The one team that worries me is Boston, because they're the one team where they could point to Gordon Hayward and say, all right, you're the single missing piece. So the Celtics can kind of convince themselves, or we get Hayward, we're a championship team. I mean, they're almost that way. Even without Gordon Hayward, they kind of probably feel like, you know, with Isaiah Thomas, you can bring in Hayward, who's another guy who can score anywhere from 20 to 30 points in any given night. The Boston's the one team that worries me. And it's kind of funny how, you know, when the Jazz show up in Boston earlier this season, the Boston fans who, you know, Hayward's got no connection to Boston whatsoever, they give him a standing ovation. I mean, his only connection is that, you know, he has a relationship with Brad Stevens going back to Butler. And I do know that Hayward likes Brad Stevens, but I got a feeling that a playoff win like against the Clippers, and even if they go out in five games against the Warriors, I think that the fact that Hayward can stay in Utah and be the main guy, I think that speaks a lot, where the franchise can be built around Gordon Hayward. I mean, not many places, you know, can he go to and say that and plus be part of a winning team. I mean, Boston's maybe the one guy, but yet then again, he wouldn't be the number one guy. Isaiah Thomas would be the number one guy. So I think the Jazz have a really good chance. Plus, they can spend the most money on him. I mean, he can make the most money in Salt Lake City, whereas other places, he's not going to be necessarily making as much money as he would in Utah.
No, I've been thinking a lot about this too. And I started thinking Boston really is the only team in my mind that makes the most sense. But see, looking at it, where does Hayward have the most opportunity to be competitive and contend, if you will? I almost think that the best spot is in Utah, because Boston, you have, I mean, sure, I think they may contend, but can they really contend? I think as long as LeBron James continues to play in this league, you got to go through LeBron, and I don't think anybody's going through LeBron. And so I have to think, I mean, in Utah, the same thing, you got to go through Golden State, but I feel like his opportunity to contend and be successful lies more here than it does anywhere else, doesn't it?
I'd kind of disagree with that, because here's what I would thinking logically, if I was him and money didn't matter. Boston got the number one seed this year without him. He could go there and he could be the Durant going to the Warriors. And when you look at the Cavs roster and cap situation versus the Warriors roster and cap situation, the Cavs are having a harder time putting supporting pieces around their big three. The Warriors really have like a big four and a half. And so I think the Warriors are going to be on top, being a 60-plus win team for more seasons than Cavs. Jazz and the Cavs had the same record this year. So, you know, from that standpoint, I still think that if you are ring chasing, it's easier to go through the East than the West. But I think what really benefits is that LeBron is still LeBron. And if he stays in Utah, he gets a lot more money. It's a longer term deal. He's not Durant's age, you know, where Durant just kind of went, you know, I just want a ring. Hayward can take that max deal. And then if things aren't working out a couple years, he can demand a trade or whatever. Even if he rides it out, after 5 years, he's going to be, what, maybe 30? Maybe then at that point, it becomes all about the rings. But here he can do both.
Now, let's face it, Gordon Hayward doesn't seem like the guy who's out at 2 a.m. I mean, the nightlife in Utah, I don't think Gordon Hayward's necessarily chasing that as other players would be. So maybe, in Utah, the nightlife kind of suits him, the guy who just wants to go to Olive Garden and enjoy dinner.
You hear that, Andre Iguodala and Matt Barnes? We know you're listening. We're just letting you know. Do you hear that? That's
yeah, Matt Barnes hate listens to this podcast.
I don't know. I mean, we can really go on and on about the Gordon Hayward bit. The West is going to change, I think, too. I don't know that Golden State remains at the top for very long. And in fact, I don't know. It's just a gut feeling I have. I think the Jazz time to move up is coming, and it's coming very soon. Assuming they can keep the pieces together. So,
well, yeah, that's a big assumption. I mean, they're probably, if you manage to keep Hayward and keep Hill, you're probably losing Joe Ingles, and he's been crucial this year.
Right.
I just look at the Warriors, and I'm assuming that they figure out a way to get Durant and get Curry, sign them both to max deals. But then between them, Draymond and Clay, that's $100 million in salary. So you don't have a lot of money to be paying everyone else around them. And you also have Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, Zaza Pachulia. They'll all be free agents. David West will be a free agent. Ian Clark will be a free agent. JaVale McGee will be a free agent. The guys who got their rings will probably be okay with just moving on and seeing how much money they can get anywhere else. And part of the Warriors' success is finding guys like Zaza Pachulia and David West willing to take a lot less money that they could probably otherwise get just for the honor of playing on a ring-contending team.
Well, truth be told, when you've got four players of the caliber that Golden State has, how much do you care what your bench brings?
Yeah. Because,
I mean, at any time you have anywhere from one to four all-stars on the court, I mean, they can work with their bench and say, you know what, Clay, we need you to be that sixth man now.
And that's
it's just one of those things. I mean, Golden State can make it work when you've got that much talent and that level of talent. They've got two MVPs.
They might have to, assuming they blow another 3-1 lead to Cleveland in the finals this year. Just saying. Anyway, all right, well, since we're on Golden State, let's jump into game one of the series. Initial reaction from you. Start with Tyson. Initial reaction from game one last night.
Well, they're going to need a little bit more scoring out of Hayward. I mean, I think that the Jazz are going to be competitive in this series. Hayward's going to need to get 25 to 30 points per game. He's going to kind of have to have the type of series he had against the Clippers. I mean, Gobert is going to get you as his 13 or 14, but I kind of wonder with Golden State and their style, kind of felt like game one was a filling out process for Gobert, because there are times when he was a little bit confused, right? Do I go out and, cover the 3-point line? Do I stay in the paint and kind of, block the layups and alter those type of shots? I mean, that's where Golden State becomes such a tough matchup, is because they don't beat themselves. And a guy like Rudy Gobert, I mean, who's he guarding? Is he guarding Durant, who can beat him off the dribble? Is it Zaza Pachulia? I mean, that's where it becomes a really tough matchup for the Jazz, is Golden State, in a way, kind of neutralizes some of Rudy Gobert's dominance. I think the Jazz can win the home games. I think they can win games, either games three or four, but they're going to need Gordon Hayward to really produce and score 25 to 30 points in order for the Jazz to have much of a chance in this series.
Now, you said something that I think is huge, and I hadn't really thought about. John, you probably know better than anyone. How many times did a healthy Jazz roster actually face off against Golden State?
The first two games they played, they didn't have Hill, Hood, and Hayward. And the second time they played them, they didn't have Hill and Favors. They lost those two. And then their other game was the second last game of the season. I can't remember if the Jazz had anyone sitting out at that point, but Golden State only sat out Clay. We were missing one person.
The last game of the season, I believe Hayward sat out that night.
Hayward sat out in the Golden State game?
I thought he did.
Was somebody, I think it was Hill or Favors, I think, missed that last game against Golden State.
But it feels like these teams, as well as we should know each other, we don't really.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
John, what about your initial reactions?
Well, if you told me to pick one game where the Warriors are going to absolutely blow out the Jazz, I would have guessed game one, because the Warriors had plenty of time to rest. Jazz had just fought this grueling 7-game series. And then you come out of that 7-game series going, man, I hope Rudy Gobert's ankle's okay. Derek Favors was questionable before the game. He played limited minutes. This was just one where you kind of wincing. Oh yeah, I just checked, and Hayward and Hood did not play in that Golden State game.
Right.
The one that they won. Okay. So, you know, Warriors only won by 12, but it really could have been more, but there was like 6 minutes to go in the game when both of them were just putting in their benches where it was right. Just obvious this was going to be over, which is why Joe Bollenboy finished as a +8.
Yeah, there
which
you
is
go.
Why Joe Bollenboy registered in the game at all.
So I want to present something to the two of you. I was thinking about this when the starting lineups were announced yesterday. Tyson, you mentioned the neutralizing of Gobert. I feel like Quinn, and I think he's going to do it again in game two, if I had to guess. I felt like he tried to neutralize Green early with Joe Johnson. Now, I'm not saying Joe Johnson is anybody that can guard Green or can provide any sort of a challenge for Green defensively, which I think he can. But I feel like putting him in the game neutralizes that a little bit, because you have the opportunity of drawing Green away from some of the better players on the floor. We didn't see them matched up very often, but I'm curious to see if Quinn continues with that lineup.
I could see Joe Johnson being somebody that they put on Draymond Green for an extended period of time. They're just about the same size. But I think that, you know, with that, with Draymond Green and his ability to get physical, you kind of wonder, do you want somebody like Joe Johnson and take some energy away from his offense? Or do you take somebody like Joe Ingles, somebody who can, like Draymond Green, guard 3 or 4 different positions, have Joe Ingles guard Draymond Green, and then, you know, maybe you put Hayward on Klay Thompson. You know, maybe you have George Hill on Curry. I mean, there's a lot of interesting matchups, and I think that's something that Quinn Snyder has been really good at, is changing up the coverages from you know, a 6-minute stretch where, you know, Draymond Green may see 3 different players guard him at one particular point. So I think the Joe Johnson thing's interesting because they're pretty much the same size, and I think Joe Johnson at times can neutralize Draymond Green. Now, can he do it for 30 minutes and,
no.
You know, still bring something on the offensive end of the floor? I think remains to be seen.
Right. What I also found interesting, and I don't know, I would be really curious of the numbers, and this is something where David Locke, Andy Larson, or somebody like that can throw these numbers out there for me. And John, I don't know, John, if you noticed, did you see how many different matchups we saw in the early 6 minutes of the game? Switches, so many switches on both ends, but particularly when Golden State was matching up against the Jazz. I don't know how often. I mean, Durant stayed with Hayward usually, but you saw guys moving around quite a bit and a lot of switches that really surprised me, whether it was Thompson on Joe Johnson, Thompson on, you know, or Green on. I'm just trying to think of all the moves around, but I was really surprised the early 6 minutes of the game, just how many different matchup opportunities we saw.
Well, the Golden State had a game plan where they were countering what they figured the Jazz were going to do, and it looks like they succeeded in that. The Jazz were trying to get switches so that they could get
right.
The guy with the ball to be defended by Stephen Curry, and the Warriors did a good job of making sure that that didn't happen.
Right.
And when you look at the numbers, Hayward and Durant did a good job defending each other. They actually kind of took Durant out of his game. The problem, though, is that Steph Curry was his usual glorious self. Draymond Green was quite efficient. He had 17 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. You know, he did everything. But the thing with game one is it was one where you knew they were going to take a beating, and they took it and they got blown away. But I'm going to be fascinated to see what adjustments are made for game two.
I am too.
Game one, they were just clearly a superior team. And so game two, we need to see what tricks Quinn has up his sleeve, because he still doesn't have a completely healthy roster. And I say that because Derek Favors could not bring the game that he brought to game 7. And that, I just find that really sad, because when he's healthy, he's one of our best players, and they really need him to be the old Derek Favors. They need him to be Game 7 Derek Favors if they have any chance.
Yeah, no, I agree. Any final, predictions for Game 2? Tyson, what do you think is going to happen, and are the Jazz going to win?
You know, it kind of reminds me of 1988 when the Jazz played the Lakers in the second round. The Lakers dominated Game 1. It was very similar to this year where the Jazz didn't really have all that much time off. The Lakers had about a week. And then in Game 2, you saw Mark Eaton dominate, and you can kind of see a similar situation playing out this year where Gobert could dominate Game 2, give the Jazz a chance to win. And then like in 1988, you know, Karl Malone had a big game. Gordon Hayward's going to need to have a big game. I'm interested in seeing who guards Gordon Hayward. I think Hayward's got a quickness advantage on Durant. But again, I wonder, you know, Draymond Green. You know, I think that Draymond Green's the kind of wild card to the whole thing because he can pretty much guard anybody from, you know, your two guard. He can guard Rodney Hood in some possessions, and then certain other possessions he can guard Rudy Gobert. So I think that it'll be interesting to see how often Draymond Green is covering somebody like Gordon Hayward in the course of the thing. I think the Jazz have a chance because of some of the adjustments. And let's face it, you know, Quinn Snyder is a much better coach than Mike Brown is. So I think that with that advantage right there, I think Quinn Snyder is going to give them a chance to win the game.
Okay. John, do they win tomorrow?
No, but it's closer.
Okay. I have to agree there. I think it's going to be much closer, and I'm going to be watching for those adjustments. Jazz need to not turn the ball over. I realize that's tough against Golden State's defense, but I feel like there were some unforced errors that the Jazz could be better about. And then you got to get back on D because those turnovers killed the Jazz last night. Transition points off turnovers. Golden State dominated that. You can't give up the ball 13 times and let them score, you know, 25, 30 points off those turnovers. Just can't let it happen. So, all right. Any other thoughts on this series? All right, let's move on to the rest of the NBA playoffs. As we speak, Houston and San Antonio are playing, and John, I just looked at the score a few minutes ago, end of the third quarter. I think San Antonio had the 5-point lead. I don't know where it's turned to now.
They've stretched it to 14 at this point.
Oh, wow. Okay, they've stretched it to 14. I want to make a comparison interesting enough between these two Western Conference playoff series. You realize that San Antonio is another one of those slow-paced teams like the Jazz. I was just looking at pace, actually. They're right down there, only a point different between them and the Jazz. And then Golden State and Houston, only a point difference on the other end of the spectrum. And it's going to be interesting. I still expect San Antonio to win that series, but it's going to be interesting to see if Houston can control the tempo, just like Golden State wants to against the Jazz, against an older, you know, veteran team like San Antonio.
Well, you know, the Rockets, they gave the Spurs the biggest home loss in the playoffs, 27 points that they've ever had. And that looked like, wow, the Rockets have all this firepower. And yet here we are in Game 2, and the Spurs, they're up double digits right now. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard has 26 points right now. It looks like he's doing his part. But he's also getting contributions from everybody else. Tony Parker, Danny Green, Marcus Aldridge, those guys are all in double figures already as well. And I would attribute what's going on right now to just how good Popovich is at coaching a series and making the adjustments he needs to make. I'm more confident at this point that the Spurs can win this series just because of the dramatic swing that we're seeing. But it's still going to be a long series. I still think Houston has all the potential in the world to win the series. I'm more inclined to think Spurs are going to win it, but you know, it's going to be a very competitive series. Even if all of them are blowouts, it could still go 7 games.
Well, I think Houston's a very difficult team to try to predict. And yeah, I would imagine the bettors in Vegas have a tough time with the Rockets because they live and die so much with the three ball that, you know, it's game to game pretty much, you know, whether they're going to be hitting on all cylinders. Like in Game 1, they're hitting on all cylinders. They have the capability of blowing anybody out. But then again, a game like Game 2, where they aren't really hitting anything, they have the capability of getting blown out. So the Rockets, it's just kind of flip a coin with them as to whether they're hitting a three ball or not. They're a very interesting team because of the analytics. And in a way, the Rockets, with their success this season, taking 43s a game, them and the Warriors are kind of changing the way the NBA is played. I don't know if it's changed for the better or worse, but it's kind of turned into that sort of game. So really with Houston, it's just a matter of, are they hitting their shots or not?
Well, speaking of hitting shots, James Harden tonight, 3 of 15 overall, 2 of 8 from downtown. He's got 13 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, and 2 steals. But, you know, and he's only been to the free throw line 6 times. Wow.
If you hold Harden to under 20 points, you win.
Well, yeah. And again, he's only gone to the line 6 times. That surprises me from Harden. But 3 of 15. So, you know, like you said, Tyson, it's a hit or miss for those guys. One guy that's hitting for them tonight is Ryan Anderson, 4 of 5 from downtown, and he's got 18 points. But I think, you know, back to your point you were just starting to make, John, is that maybe the Spurs are just, let's stop Harden and we'll let everybody else on the Rockets beat us because they're not going to be able to. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, Anderson's hitting all his shots, but Ariza's not, Beverly's not,
nope.
Harden's not.
Right.
Spurs are the number one defense.
Yeah, they are. All right. So let's move on. One of the other more exciting series, Boston and Washington. How about last night?
That was dramatic. I watched that game. That was amazing to watch. Whenever I hear I see the numbers on how bad a defender Isaiah Thomas is, but watching him, just how quick he is and how he can get everywhere and just how he gets off all these shots, goes into overtime. He winds up with 53 points, gets the win. I really thought the Wizards were going to win that game, but you know, he just would not be denied, and it was fascinating.
By the way,
very entertaining.
By the way, Isaiah Thomas, 28 of those points in fourth quarter in overtime. Holy crap.
Yeah.
There's no question that he's clutch. I mean, he gives all short people, he gives them inspiration. I mean, he's like 5'8" on a good day. I mean, he's probably closer to 5'7". I mean, I'm probably about 5'8" myself, and I can't imagine doing the things that he does. I mean, the thing that amazes me about Isaiah Thomas, he's about 5'8", yet he does such a good job of getting a shot off. I mean, you see guys that are 6'2", 6'3", that can't make it in the NBA because they have a tough time getting their shot off. I'm amazed how consistently he is able to create an open shot and to get an open shot. He does it, you know, possession in, possession out. I'm amazed by that.
Is he the best 5'8 guy we've ever watched in the NBA? I mean, there's been some guys over the years that are short. Muggsy Bogues comes to mind, other players. This guy might be the best short guy to ever play the game.
Yeah, he's better than Calvin Murphy, Muggsy Bogues, Spud Webb. I think Iverson has an inch or two on him, and he's not to that level, but yeah.
What were you going to say, Tyson?
I was going to say Calvin Murphy, great scorer, but yet Isaiah Thomas probably even a better scorer than Calvin Murphy. He's probably the best guy under-listed at 6 feet that we've ever seen.
I have to agree, and I never saw this coming. I mean, I saw him good, but I never saw this. This is insane. Who wins that series? I mean, we're 2 games in. Boston's up 2-0. I honestly thought it was going to be 1-1 after last night, but then, of course, Boston takes it to overtime and wins. But does Washington have enough to come back and do what Boston did to Chicago last series, or is this one done? Boston's got it.
I think Boston has it, and it comes down to bench play.
Okay.
You know, Celtics just have a much better bench. Wizards, their bench goes in, and the plus minus shifts dramatically, and you could see it again last night. Oubre was minus 24.
Ouch.
Yeah, they're just not getting it from those guys. Jennings was 0-2. Bogdanovich was 0-2. It's like they need their starters to play all 48 minutes to win, and you can't do that in the playoffs.
I think Boston wins in 6 games. I think the difference really is, you think about Isaiah Thomas being the star, but they surrounded him with the perfect cast of characters, the perfect role players. Jay Crowder is like the ultimate role player. He's kind of like Damari Carroll or, you know, a Draymond Green of the East. I mean, he's somebody that he just plays role, plays it well, and I think Boston's going to be too much for Washington.
All right. I won't disagree. All right, and the other series tonight, Cleveland won and is now 2-0 up on Toronto. No surprises there, I would assume, from anybody, you know?
No.
No, not really any surprises.
LeBron's turning it on. I think everybody was worried coming into the playoffs. Even as good as Boston is in this series against Washington, I have to believe the way that LeBron has turned it on and the way that the Cavs have turned it around, turned it on after a very slow start. I just think they got it. I don't see Boston challenging them, and Cleveland, I don't know. Maybe they go five games. Maybe Toronto takes one at home. I'm not sure if it makes it to six, but it seems right now LeBron's just dominating.
He is, but the thing with Cavs is their offense is so good that it doesn't matter that their defense is just kind of average.
Right.
And, you know, I would not be surprised if the Cavs sweep the Raptors. I could easily see that.
Really?
I do think Boston's, yeah. They've blown them out in both games, and they just have that confidence going, and Raptors don't have a great history in the playoffs. When it comes to Boston, I would have felt a lot better about their chances beating the Cavs if it wasn't for those two losses against Chicago, where if Chicago had had a healthy Rajon Rondo, Celtics might not have even made it to the second round. And if you're that kind of team, then why am I going to feel confident about you getting past the Cavaliers?
But I do
think that they'll be competitive, but you know, I still think the Cavs overall, their offense is just too good.
And my
defense is an issue for the Cavaliers, but I don't think it's gonna, you know, really be that glaring until the finals. About the in the first round against the Pacers, the Cavaliers won by a 4-game sweep, but it's the first 4-game sweep in the NBA since the 1995 NBA Finals when the Rockets swept the Magic. That the team that won all four games in the series allowed 100 points or more. And so, you know, Cleveland, it's going to really, you know, show up when they play Golden State. But, you know, right now, Kyrie Irving and, you know, the role players, Kyle Korver, Darren Williams, and getting J.R. Smith back, I think it's big for them. Just because he's that wild card that when he's hot, you know, he's just about as good as any two guard in the league, really, when he's got his A game going. And so, I think that, you know, with Cleveland getting those guys with those guys back and healthy, I think, you know, Cleveland's it's going to be a runaway to the finals, really.
Oh, and by the way, Cleveland won tonight with LeBron being LeBron, Love being nothing. I mean, Love really didn't contribute a lot tonight, and neither did Kyrie Irving. I mean, you saw it kind of sparse among some of the players, but tonight was LeBron's game. I looked back at the stats and Love didn't shoot the ball particularly well, didn't seem to look particularly well tonight. So, but no, I'm with you guys. I think it's an easy trip to the finals for them this year. So, any other thoughts on the playoffs, John?
I do think that if the Warriors somehow get past the Jazz, they will win the championship this year.
Wow.
Yeah,
calling it already.
The Warriors can overcome falling asleep with the nightlife of Salt Lake City, and it's probably going to run away to the finals for them as well.
And by the way, props to the Utah Jazz marketing team for coming up with a new T-shirt. Hashtag nightlife. Go get one.
Those things are going to sell in a hurry.
I think they already are. And if I remember correctly, it's another one of those shirts where I saw Steve Starks mention that they're going to a good cause too, right?
Yeah, I think a dollar from each of them goes to Five for the Fight.
There you go. Dollar for each to Five for the Fight. That's pretty good.
I believe. Don't quote me on
No, that. I think I saw the same thing. So props to the Jazz marketing team for pulling off something awesome. All of my friends that are not Jazz fans have already said something to me about it too and are laughing and think it's fantastic. In fact, one of my buddies who is a Clippers fan retweeted it today and said to me, talk about the most epic trolling that you could ever ask for anybody to do. The Jazz trolled him, and they trolled him hard, and it's perfect. all right. So that's the end of talk on the playoffs. Let's jump ahead to, we have any listener questions, feedback, John, this week?
The only question I got was about their chances against Golden State. I think we pretty much addressed that.
I think so too. All right. Let's move on to a segment I really enjoy. Devin's Quick Hits, where Devin throws us all sorts of wrenches and we get to answer our thoughts on them. Go ahead, Devin.
Should we just talk about LeBron James some more?
Sure.
I feel like one of our listeners will really appreciate that. I know.
Oh, we have a couple of listeners that like LeBron. Well, go for it.
One is a huge fan. I mean, we're talking like a diehard LeBron fan.
In fact, right about now, he'll be listening tomorrow and probably tweeting at us about how much he hates us, but that's okay.
I love hearing from you, Brian. So LeBron reached another milestone today. Passed Kareem on the playoff points list. He is now up to 5,777. He is trailing one man, his heirness, MJ, 5,987. So he's, what, 210 points behind? When does he get there? Because I get the feeling it's going to happen during these playoffs.
How many points away did you say?
210. Does
210. He scores 30 points in the next seven games, he beats it.
How many points in the next seven games? 200?
30 in the next seven.
Or 30 a night? Yeah. Yeah, he'll get there.
Probably either the last game of the Celtics series or the first game of the finals.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does it this year.
Yeah, I think so.
So we have to talk about this, and this is going to drive someone crazy.
But it's going to drive a few people crazy. I don't care. Let's talk about it.
This record, because he's going to get there. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he'd have to have a career-ending injury. Is this going to be one of those Stockton records that we never see broken?
Probably, because I'll say this. LeBron, Cavs get to the finals. That is LeBron's eighth trip there. Even MJ only got there six times. He won all six, but still, he only got there six times. LeBron's going there his eighth time. And I think that's more impressive than what his win-loss record is. It's the fact that he was able to do it at all.
And with the teams that he's taken there.
With two different teams, yeah.
Yeah.
Four with the Heat, and now about to be four with the Cavs.
Yep.
I do see that as one of those very, very hard to obtain. I don't think it's going to be unbeatable like Stockton's. No one is ever going to beat Stockton's assist or steals records. The playoffs one, I could see it if you have another talent come along like LeBron, who is so talented that he can get his team to the finals that many times. But I think it'll be a long time before anyone can start climbing up that list. Do you have the list in front of you? Like, can you tell me who's fourth and fifth and so on?
Let me pull that back up one moment.
While you're looking that up, let's realize that it's taken how many years for that to be reached by LeBron or anybody that his heirness held.
I mean, Michael said it 20 years ago. So.
Yeah, and LeBron still has probably, I'm just going to say, at least three more years in his career, and I could see him go another 5 years the way he's going.
And you're talking playoff points.
Yep, yep.
He'll be in the playoffs every year he plays.
Until he retires. Yeah, I think so. Go ahead. Who's the other ones on that list, Devin?
Number three is Kareem. Number four is Kobe. Number five is just leaving that one off where I can't see it on the image. Let me see if I can find it. I want to say it was either Shaq or Carl.
Okay.
All right. That probably won't, if it is beaten, it won't be beaten for at least another
20 years or more, 30 years. I agree. Tyson, what do you think?
I think you're talking about, if he wins a championship this year, he passes Bird with four. It's one of those things that you think about in this era. I mean, top five player of all time, whether he's top three, top two, I mean, Jordan, and then after him, I mean, LeBron at some point passes Kobe if he hasn't already. You're probably thinking top three all time for LeBron James. But you think about the playoff scoring. I mean, even though now you're in the era where they have a 7-game first round as opposed to a 5-game first round, didn't really matter because his team seems to sweep the first round anyway. It's not like there's that many more playoffs than what you previously see.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
Okay, keeping with the LeBron James thing, I want to throw this out there. ESPN shared an article on 538.com that says LeBron doesn't get better in the playoffs. He's always this good. And I know that we've talked about this on the podcast, how it just seems like LeBron almost coasts, even in games, it's like he coasts the first three quarters and then just turns it on in the fourth if he has to. Does that title, does that concept interest you to say, no, he's always as good as he is in the playoffs? Because it seems, especially with the last 2 years' finals performances.
Well, yeah, he's raised it to a new level in the finals for 2 years in a row. We have seen LeBron in fashion that I don't think we've ever seen before the last two finals years. So, no, he coasts. I'm going to argue that I think he does raise it a new level when he gets to the finals. Whether he raises it a level in the playoffs itself, no, I think LeBron's always playing at playoff level throughout the season, really.
Guys?
I think he's smarter every year in that he knows his body and he knows what the team needs. But you can tell this year that they, late in the season, they wound up, you know, they made some decisions with rest and otherwise where they just didn't go ahead and go for that number one seed. But when he's in the playoffs, you know, he's 100%. And when he's 100%, who's going to stop him? He's going to get to the finals no matter what.
I mean, we see it every year when the Jazz beat LeBron's team here. I mean, LeBron does have moments when he coasts, but that's probably because he knows that he's going to have to play into mid-June every year. And so a game in January or a game in February in some random city, I don't know that he necessarily, you know, cares about that game, doesn't necessarily give the type of effort that he would 5 years ago. But that's probably because as he's getting older, he's just getting smarter and knowing when to turn it on, you know, when to dominate and when to defer to his other teammates. And his other teammates, you know, at times can look really, really good as well. I mean, Kyrie Irving almost single-handedly won the Cavaliers one of the games in the finals. I think it was game 6 against Golden State. So I think he's just been smarter as to, you know, when to turn it on and when to kind of, you know, let a game in January and kind of ease off the gas.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I know it's going to break Brian's heart, but let's talk about something besides LeBron James. There's a boxing match coming up, Alvarez versus Chavez. Alan doesn't care.
I don't care.
We know. Do you guys care? Do you follow boxing? Does this interest you? Because I don't follow it a lot. I watched it fairly often as a kid, but to me, this seems like a pretty big fight.
Boxing is not what it was 20, 30 years ago. I don't really care. 20, 30 years ago, I could have named you 6 or 7 boxers. I could not do that now.
They're still boxing? That's still a thing?
So what we're saying is MMA has taken over and boxing is essentially no more unless it has...
Ear biting
or Pacquiao or Mayweather.
Floyd versus Connor whenever that happens. Yeah.
We're not talking about that. That has to happen for me to talk about that. Okay.
All right, next.
Do you care about golf?
Yes.
Do you care that Tony Romo is trying to qualify for the U.S. Open?
Is there anything that Tony Romo is not going to try out for? Maybe I should ask that.
Here's the funny thing about golf. It's the type of sport where anyone can do it if you happen to be good at it. And if that makes sense, you know, like basketball, you kind of have to have certain physical attributes for you to have a prayer of being good at it. Golf, a guy like John Daly can be competing in the U.S. Open. You just have to master the swing and just master certain things. So it's one of those sports where it seems like more people have the potential to be good at it and be able to do it if they really want to put in the time and just figure out the right form and everything. So good for Romo if he's trying that out. I don't see that as any worse an attempt at something as, you know, Jordan in baseball. So sure, go for it. Be better at golf than Tebow is at baseball. Try that, Romo, and see how you do.
It was just going to be a foregone conclusion that the first year Tony Romo gets out playing football, he was going to try out for the U.S. Open. I mean, that was just a foregone conclusion. I almost think that, you know, with Romo, it's not the U.S. Open. It's when he gets to be 50 years old. He probably is going to be one of those guys that's going to be hanging on to the senior tour.
Oh, yeah, that's probably true. And let's put it this way. As much as I love golf, golf is just not – without Tiger Woods, it's just not what it was. I want the competitiveness back. And without Tiger, it's just not what it was.
Oh, it absolutely needs Tiger. The problem is that the great golfers now, I mean, they've been looking for Rory McIlroy, looking for Spieth. They wanted those guys to replace Tiger Woods. But the problem is – those guys are just as likely to miss the cut as they are being the leaderboard these majors. And so unfortunately, they have not had somebody dominate golf the way Tiger Woods has, or even close to the way Tiger Woods has. And really, it's kind of turned a lot of people away from golf, myself included. I didn't necessarily watch as much of the Masters this year because I just wasn't as interested in the top golfers, the guys in the leaderboard.
I might have watched it a little more, been more interested had Dustin Johnson not hurt himself. Because Dustin was a reason to get excited. I've enjoyed watching his career a little bit. I haven't watched it as avidly as maybe I've watched like Tiger or somebody else, but Dustin was intriguing heading in, and unfortunately didn't finish out the Masters that week due to that fall. But yeah, I'm the same. It's a tough sport to draw fans into if you don't have the right kind of competition and the right marquee names. And it's crazy. Tiger made himself a marquee name. You just don't have other guys that can do that. So
yeah, you had Tiger, and then yeah, had Phil Mickelson right there, and guys like Jim Furyk and Rory McIlroy aren't quite the. There isn't quite the 1-2 there. And, you know, Tiger was clearly the number one and Phil was the number two. But I don't know. I mean, who would you say is the most popular golfer right now? You know, it's not an obvious answer.
No, it's not.
Whereas for a good decade, it was obviously Tiger. And now you can't really pick anyone.
Yep.
All right, let's jump sports. Football, I feel like, is interesting. There is a video available. Florida Gators kicker nails an 81-yard field goal in full pads.
Wow.
Does anyone ever try that in a game? Do we see that one day eventually, or is this just something really cool that no one cares about at the end of the day?
Really? No, they will never try it.
Well, closest thing we ever got was Sebastian Janikowski trying a 76-yard field goal at the end of the first half. I don't think anybody's going to be stupid enough to try an 81-yard field goal at the end of a half.
Yeah, and I still think the record's like 63 yards at this point, isn't it? Or 65 yards?
Yeah, I think it's still 63, tied by four or five guys now.
Yeah. I mean, at 81, that's another 18 yards tacked onto that. I tell you what, if it happened, game over, dude. Just game over. Throw the games out. We're done.
Taking the kickoff, taking a knee, and then being like, okay, we'll just kick it.
Yeah. Forget overtime rules, man. 81 yards.
You know,
we'll take the knee. We're going to kick it.
There was a 70s Disney comedy called Gus about a donkey who could kick field goals.
Yes.
That's what this is bringing to mind right now.
Oich!
Oich, and then he'd kick an 80-yard field goal.
Yep, I remember that one very well. Wasn't Tim Conway, right? Tim Conway and Don Knotts.
Edward Asner, Don Knotts.
Oh, fantastic
Tom Bosley,
show.
Bob Crane, Johnny Unitas.
Yep, love that show.
All right. We're going to stick with football. we had the draft happen, and we don't have time to go into all of the inner workings of the draft, this, that, and the other. But what I would like is for each of you to tell me your thoughts on what your team did, if you cared. If you didn't care, then just say, I don't even know who we got. I'll figure it out next year.
I'll be quick. I didn't necessarily care, but I'm going to make a few Ute fans very happy here when I'm going to say, I am glad that my team drafted Joe Williams. So welcome to San Francisco, Joe Williams.
Was it San Francisco that pulled off the deal with Chicago?
Yeah, was it?
Where they traded up?
Yeah, it was.
Traded down one pick.
Yep. Yeah, so it was.
Yeah, bravo on that, because I mean, that's just, that is one of the worst trades I've ever seen, I think.
That Chicago gave up.
Yeah, if you're Chicago, yeah. It's like, yeah. Here, just take all of our picks for nothing.
Well, and I think San Francisco won the draft. At least that's what I'm reading from a lot of post-draft boards. Everybody thinks San Francisco really won that draft, or at least really graded high in the draft. But no, that's my only thoughts on the draft. I didn't really care, didn't keep up on it much, but I am kind of excited about having Joe Williams on the team. So, John, what about you?
I liked that Seattle did a lot of defensive picks. I thought that's an area where they really could use some help, and that's what they focused on high in the draft. I also liked that I saw that Taysom Hill is going to get a shot with the Packers.
Yep.
And Packers, they've kind of been my third team just because Brady Bopinga played them for them for a long time.
Oh,
and I had a connection there, but
he's not the only Cougar.
No, but my wife helped deliver Brady's first child, so I've always been rooting for him, especially.
But I'm saying he was not the only Cougar drafted this year over or brought over into Green Bay. Jamal Williams, this head there too. So
yep, that makes the Packers rival the Lions for who might be my third favorite team this year.
There you go, Tyson. What about you? Who's your NFL team?
Chargers. So I'm kind of in the market, I guess, for looking for a new NFL team. Lately. I'm not even so sure what the Chargers did. I mean, I guess we drafted some players and did some things. I'm very intrigued with Green Bay, though, because think about the running back situation. I think that of all the running backs that got picked, I mean, Jamal Williams landed in a perfect spot where he's going to get some playing time. He's going to get some carries. And if he is a good running back, if he does have the ability to be a good NFL running back, he's going to have the opportunity to prove it in Green Bay coming up this year. I mean, I'm very intrigued to see how he does in Green Bay.
No, I agree. And I think like you said, it's a good situation for him. Aaron Rodgers, that could, the two of them could play off each other pretty well. I think Packers fans should be kind of excited about that, especially the Packer BYU fans. But yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
And
listening to all the reactions of the teams, I think everyone's going to finish 16-0 and have a really positive season this year.
There you go. End of story. Mic drop. We're good.
I like to be realistic. I'll be honest. I think the Broncos will lose one game.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we won't even ask you your thoughts on the draft because it's the Broncos. Let's move on.
We got a ute. They took a ute in the first round.
Can we just talk about the ute's success in the draft this year for just a minute?
Was it eight players?
Eight players. Bravo. That's a good year.
That's just the draft. They had some guys who should have been drafted that were not.
Yep. Bravo.
The fact that Hunter Dimmick was not drafted blew my mind.
And our listener, Brian, that we already gave crap for about LeBron, he's a BYU fan like myself. I love the Cougars, but bravo, Utah. NFL machine this year. Good job.
It was just a good overall draft and you know, free agent signing period for all of the Utah schools. I mean,
agreed.
Weber State had a guy picked up. I can't remember where he went. I think it was Arizona, maybe. But
yep, there you go.
Hey. Weber State. Who was it?
Oh, you're gonna put me on the spot?
Yeah, you're gonna have to look it up, Devin. Come on,
you're gonna do that.
Unless Tyson
draft page. I'm scrolling trying to figure out
what was not drafted.
Unless Tyson can pull it off the top of his head, maybe he knows.
Hang on.
No, I must have missed the tweets about that.
How does
Utah not win the Pac-12 South? Eight guys drafted.
What's that? Yeah.
How does Utah not win the Pac-12 South with all that talent they had on that roster?
That is the next question to ask, definitely. So, what was that name again, Devin? Trayvon Johnson.
Oh, okay.
To the Cardinals. There you go.
He is a linebacker.
So Utah schools all had some success getting players into NFL squads this year. Good job.
Okay, I'm going to do one more quick hit.
One more.
I feel like we have to talk about it because it seems to be a big deal right now. And it involves baseball, and it involves Boston, and it involves racial taunts.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like this is a subject really that needs to get brought up.
Right.
To me, this is one of those things that I think a lot of people think, no, this doesn't happen. But I'm wondering, do you guys feel that way, or do you think this probably happens a lot more than anyone wants to admit?
Well, it's tough because, you know, maybe a baseball stadium lends itself more to something like this because you don't sell out every game and you're kind of distant over there. And maybe you feel safer yelling out things like that when there aren't as many people around. You know, I couldn't see something like this, you know, at football or basketball. But maybe in something like baseball, it is something that people are going to still do. I mean, they obviously did that. They still do in this day and age.
See, I disagree. I think it happens more in basketball than we realize, and possibly in the NFL. It's an unfortunate situation. I was one of those people that believed a few years ago that thought, no, this isn't the case anymore. It's not. I was naive to it, probably. I carried some naivety about it, but my eyes have been open, and I got to say, it's crazy that it was brought up in Boston alone, Fenway Park. I mean, it and from what I understand, there's a history there, not just with opposing players, but with current players or with players that have played for Boston that have treated like that too. Read an interesting article on Ringer, on the Ringer, that talked about where, and I can't remember the writer's name, but he talked about the fact that this isn't an opportunity to absolve the rest of us from anything and just put all the focus on Fenway. We need to recognize that this is an issue everywhere. And the real question was, why didn't the other so many thousands of fans in that stadium even take a stance on it? And it's an interesting question. There's a lot of angles you can look at it from this. But it's crazy. It's sad. I don't know. I could go on, and I don't want to. But Tyson, your thoughts?
You kind of hope it doesn't happen. It probably happens more than we'd care to hope or realize it does. I mean, I think that part of it might be that you talk about a very contentious series. I mean, Boston and Baltimore have been thrown at each other. Manny Machado's getting thrown at. And see, you got some animosity between division rivals. You kind of hope it doesn't happen very often. You kind of hope that it's just kind of unfortunate. And as you mentioned, I think that it's probably as common, if not more common, in the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, those sort of leagues. It's one of those things that, as you mentioned, why weren't the people standing around him, you know, starting a fight with the guy, you know, because it's just something that, you know, probably shouldn't happen in stadiums. Unfortunately, in 2017, we're still dealing with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And there's been a lot in the social realm over the last couple of years, especially, that has brought it more to the forefront. I mean, we've had so many different incidents across the country. We've had athletes now taking stances. Colin Kaepernick comes to mind, among others, about social injustices and social problems. And yeah, here we are, 2017, still dealing with it, still in the forefront, I think. It may have been brushed under the rug for a while, but it's still there, obviously. So, any other quick hits? We done, Devin?
No, we'll call it there.
All right. Let's move to our final topic, pop culture. John, before we get into the meat of pop culture, I want to take a minute. And Tyson, every time we have a guest on, we always ask them their favorite movie or their favorite TV show or both. And you're on the spotlight. What's your favorite movie of all time, or your favorite TV show, or both?
My favorite TV show is a classic. It's Cheers. You know, back in Boston, of all places, Cheers. And if there's a second show, probably Home Improvement. I watched a lot of Home Improvement growing up. My favorite movie is Hoosiers. I'm a big Hoosiers fan. I kind of love when the Indiana Pacers wore the Hickory jerseys the last couple years. So the movie, I kind of stay with sports and with the TV shows. I'm more of the classic 90s and 80s TV shows.
I don't really watch it
too much of it these days.
I like it. That's awesome. Those are some great, great options. Okay, John, this weekend kicks off the summer of movie blockbuster. It might be one of the greatest blockbuster summers we've seen in a while. Starting by the time everybody listens to this or close to it, Guardians of the Galaxy kicks it off this weekend. What did you want to talk about?
Well, I did a article on germsky.blogspot.com about my summer movie predictions for the domestic box office. And I was just looking at how things seem to be tracking, the excitement and everything. And so I made my predictions. And once I was writing them all out, I realized that the first 9 movies that I had listed were all a sequel or a remake or a reboot or a spinoff of something else. The first original title I got to was I was at number 10 before I finally got to something original.
All right. But what is your top 10?
The top 10 movies I think that are going to gross the most this summer. Number one, I'm saying Spider-Man Homecoming. I think that's going to be the biggest movie of the summer. It looks fun. The new Spider-Man looks cool. We all got a taste of him in Captain America Civil War, and they just seem to be doing it right. And Marvel, right, so far, it seems like they can do no wrong, the Disney-Marvel pact. So I think that's going to continue. And number two is in the same universe. I think Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is going to be the second biggest movie of the year. It's going to open huge this Friday. Probably going to open over 150 million domestic, probably 400 million worldwide just in the first 10 days. And so I see that being the second biggest.
Early reviews on that movie, by the way, early reviews are very good. Very good.
Very positive compared to most of the reviews I'm seeing are saying it is as good or almost as good as the original.
Yep.
And that's exactly what it needs.
Yep.
Third biggest I'm saying is going to be Despicable Me 3. There's always a big animated movie in the summer, and this franchise seems to be the hottest one right now. The Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2 both did really well, but then when they did the Minions spinoff, that one wound up making even more money than the first two. So I think bringing Gru back, but still having the Minions being big characters, I think that's going to be the biggest animated movie, number three overall. Number four, I'm taking a bit of a gamble on Wonder Woman. I know the DC universe hasn't been that great quality-wise, but they have been making their money box office-wise. I am predicting that this movie is going to be better reviewed than Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad. Probably not hard. Even though it might not make as much money, I think it's going to be the first movie where you feel like the DC universe is finally going in the right direction.
And isn't, if I remember correctly, it is directed by a female as well as starring a female, right?
It is directed by Patty Jenkins. She made her directorial debut with Monster, which was all about female serial killer Eileen Wuornos. Yep. Charlize Theron won her Oscar in that movie. And Patty Jenkins has mostly been doing TV work since, but she won the job. So it was a risk for DC to hire her. I know they really wanted a female director, but she wasn't the most obvious choice. So it's a gamble for them to give it to her. But, you know, previews so far have been decent.
Yeah.
Next is number five, I'm saying, is going to be Transformers. The Last Knight is the fifth Transformers movie. I know a lot of people are like, why are they making more of these? Because they keep making money.
Yep.
The last one made $1 billion worldwide. So, you know, people keep seeing it.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it again. And it really doesn't matter how good or bad it is. It's going to make money. Number six, I'm saying, is going to be Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. This is the fifth Pirates movie. I don't think a lot of people really liked the fourth one or even remember what happened in the fourth one, and yet it still made $1 billion worldwide. This one, you know, Javier Bardem looks like a pretty decent villain. They're bringing back Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley.
They're bringing back all the cast, I believe.
Yeah. Jeffrey Rush is still around as Barbossa.
Yep.
So it might not be as big as the previous Pirates movies, but it's still going to do well enough to be number six overall this summer. Number seven, I'm going to say, is Cars 3, Pixar. The only really flop that they've had is The Good Dinosaur. Even Cars 2, which people didn't really like, still made its money. Cars 3, they've been kind of hiding what the plot is about. The plot basically seems to be that Lightning McQueen gets in a wreck on the track, and he's an older model, and he's not sure if he can still keep up with these younger, newer cars. But they haven't really revealed a lot in their trailers. My guess is there's going to be a final trailer in the next week or two that gives us more details. I think it's going to do well. It's not going to be as dominant as previous Pixar titles, but it'll still do well. Number eight, I picked War for the Planet of the Apes. The first two were very successful. I see this one following suit. It might not be as much as the first two, but it'll still be good enough to be profitable. Andy Serkis has been the star of these, and it's been remarkable that they've been able to create this franchise where the humans are all different every movie, but the CGI apes are the same and they carry over. And, you know, the first two movies, what made them work is that they were good. I mean, they were well-made movies. And I think this one, you know, director Matt Reeves is back. I think it'll follow suit. Number nine, I'm going with The Mummy, starring Tom Cruise. Not interested.
I'm not.
They're taking a different tack with it, where it's a female mummy, and the latest preview shows that Tom Cruise dies, and it looks like he becomes a mummy as well. And so it's, you have good mummy versus bad mummy. Tom Cruise, his action movies are pretty reliable, and
right.
Universal really wants this one to do well. Russell Crowe's in it, and I know who he's playing, but they're kind of hiding in the marketing who his character is. I think that'll be a positive to the franchise, and their plans are to build a monster cinematic universe. They are also developing an Invisible Man movie with Johnny Depp, and I would assume that they're going to try to get big names to play Dracula and Frankenstein in movies soon, and create a big monster world. So right. I think they're putting a lot of hopes on this one. Number 10 is the first movie, you will notice, that is not a sequel or remake or reboot. It is actually original, and I am going with Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk.
Really? Wow.
Christopher Nolan has never made a World War II movie. And because it's director Christopher Nolan, I think this one will be successful. It's all about the battle at Dunkirk and the evacuation that they had to do. And my understanding is they're telling it from three different perspectives. They're following a story in the air, a story at sea, and then a story on the beach, and rotating around between those three perspectives. I'm very excited for this. I'm looking forward to see what Christopher Nolan is going to do with the World War II story.
So tell me, how do you categorize the summer movies from May to what?
May to August.
Okay. There's a movie I'm surprised you didn't put on there that I think may surprise you as far as money making. Just saw the trailer for it this morning. Having read the books, I'm very excited about it, or at least I'm halfway through the series reading the books. Stephen King's The Dark Tower.
Yep.
And I think that one could make some money and surprise a few people.
I had high hopes for this one. I was kind of underwhelmed by the trailer. I have it as number 16 on my list.
Okay.
Overall. I've been gauging the reactions of other people, some who've read the books and some who haven't read the books. And I don't know. I only read the first book, and I would say the trailer portrays the world differently than I had pictured in my head. Now, maybe in the later books, it gets a lot more sci-fi. But I was kind of picturing it to be a little more ghostly Western, and this one made it look like it's a...
Agreed.
Just more of a sci-fi action flick.
And that's what I was concerned about. My understanding was that they're drawing a difference between it and the book a bit. And from what I understand, Stephen King signed off on this thing. I mean, he tweeted out this morning on his account, check out the trailer for the movie. So, I mean, he's obviously signed off on it. It doesn't probably match to par what he wrote, and I think he's okay with that. I don't know how many of the films really matched his books. It's hard to say. I haven't read his other books, so I don't know. And maybe you have. I don't know. But he signed off on this one, and if he's endorsing it, I have to believe that it's going to fall in line with what he anticipated on the big screen.
Well, a movie of his that I think is going to be bigger that doesn't come out till fall is It. That preview was awesome.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And I remember seeing the original, so.
Yeah.
Tyson, you got any movies this summer you're interested in seeing? Some of the ones mentioned or anything like that? Anything you're booking to go see?
You know, the one that was mentioned at number 10, Dunkirk, I think looks to be very interesting. I think if you're a movie director and maybe if you're a movie company, you're thinking, all right, what kind of movies do you make? Or animation and movies that feature superheroes. You can almost never go wrong with those type of movies. Like if there's a Friday night, or there's a movie, or there's an animated film, or there's one featuring a few superheroes. I don't care what the movie plot is. I'm probably going and seeing that on a Friday night.
Yeah. Agreed. And John mentioned quite a few that all fit on my list. Guardians of the Galaxy being very first, and I have a feeling I'll be seeing it this weekend. I want to. Guardians of the Galaxy is still my favorite Marvel universe film, whatnot, to date. So I'm looking forward to this one very, very much.
Never seen it.
You didn't see the first one?
Nope.
Come on down to my house, Devin. We're going to have to watch it. I think you will like it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one a lot. Kurt Russell is going to be in this one. Yeah, it looks good.
I would, but I got basketball to watch.
Oh, my gosh. Come on.
Not on Friday.
No, not on Friday. And for that matter, you can go to a matinee Saturday and it won't get in the way of basketball.
Game two is Thursday. Game three is Saturday. Game four is Monday. And if we need game five and six and so on, they'll let us know.
By the way, for everybody who will be listening to this on Thursday, game two tonight. But I'm also going to tell you, I'm going to wish you all happy Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. Because you will be listening. This will be released on Star Wars Day. So enjoy.
Yeah, we planned it that way.
Totally. It was planned.
Had nothing to do with the game being on a Tuesday night.
Nope, not at all.
Nope.
So,
hey Tyson, I just want to tell you thank you for coming on the show.
It was a lot of fun. I got to say that I'm really picky when it comes to listening to podcasts. This is the one I listen to. I mean, I have maybe three podcasts to listen to. This is like at the top of the list. So this is a lot of fun.
Appreciate that a lot. No, I am glad that we can provide some entertainment and that you enjoy listening. So we like to ramble on. We like to have fun. So I'm hoping that comes through on the other end. Okay.
you can't see it, but I'm blushing.
Oh boy. He's blushing like a high school girl right now. Stop it. Stop it, Devin. Stop it.
Unblush.
No, we really do appreciate you coming on, Tyson. Thank you very, very much. Why don't you take a moment and tell our listeners where to find you, and once again, the name of your weekly show, which, by the way, I listen to and enjoy as well.
My weekly podcast, The Tyson Show, you can find it on iTunes, SoundCloud, I guess just about anywhere you can find podcasts. I'm on Twitter at Tyson on Sports things like that, I guess.
Awesome. And hopefully maybe we'll hear you back on the radio soon too. Yeah. No, you working at that?
Maybe so. We're hoping. We're still searching.
Awesome. I hope so too. And you know what? We didn't get a chance to touch base on the ESPN stuff. I just have to say, I'm saddened by all that's gone on over the last few weeks of layoffs. A lot of the guys that are laid off, I am going to miss. The True Hoop Network included. A lot of great stuff being, and then the latest news, rumor, I still think, because I don't think it was ever verified, Woj and the Vertical coming to ESPN. Is that right?
Oh, we knew that months ago, but they've now have a firm date when they're coming over.
All right.
I could not believe that they laid off Chad Ford, but it makes sense that they've moved up. The Vertical crew are going to be, I think June is when they're going to officially be there. So they'll be there in time for the NBA draft.
Yeah.
And that was already in the works. I still feel bad that Chad Ford is getting laid off because that deal happened, but
I'm sad that a lot of the guys got laid off that did. It was unfortunate.
I know. I listened to the True Hoop podcast. I'm going to miss those guys. I'm going to miss Ethan Strauss. But at the same time, I'm sure they're going to wind up somewhere where we'll still be able to find them. I bet one or two wind up at the Ringer, and they'll be around at other places.
I'm still glad they were smart enough to hang on to Zach Lowe. Just saying.
Yeah,
I would have been mad if they'd let him go.
They might as well have announced that we're not covering the NBA anymore.
Yeah, pretty much.
They got real low.
All right, well, let's wrap it up. We want to thank you once again, Tyson, for joining us on Jedi and Germs. Folks, if you're listening, you know where to find us, but I'm going to tell you again. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. And look for us next week when we bring you again yet another episode. We enjoy you listening. We enjoy you being along for the ride. And for your constant feedback, thank you so very much. With that, John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.